Everybody could have their seat, and could we please start the recording? Thank you. And just a housekeeping reminder, if you are speaking, please announce your name prior to making any statements. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Sherry. We'll give it another 30 seconds and get going. Welcome, gentlemen. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. So, I'm sorry, Sherry, did we start the recording already? Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks. Hi, everybody. Keith Drazik. Again, this is the afternoon session of the Registry Stakeholder Group meeting in Buenos Aires, Argentina. We have with us today representatives from ICANN's Security and Stability Advisory Committee, ESSAC. So I would like to first welcome Patrick and Jim and ESSAC colleagues here. And because part of the topic of discussion today is likely to revolve around name collision, I wanted to note that that we also have Jeff Schmidt from Jazz Global Advisors here with us. So if there are specific questions about Jazz Advisors' work on the name collision occurrence management framework, that we could probably hold that until the 15 minutes after the session with ESSAC. So we've got 30 minutes with ESSAC and then 15 minutes following that with Jeff. So just to set some groundwork there. So with that, Patrick, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So what we have in front of us is an agenda that takes about half a day to go through. And to be able to do this in as efficient way as possible for these 30 minutes, we are here to talk about whatever you want to talk about. So because we are talking about this all days, and we have done that for months. So the agenda in front of us is what you currently see, and Keith, I would like to, from you, get some ideas about what you think we should concentrate on.
Okay, thanks very much, Patrick. So again, just some background. As we were developing the Registry Stakeholder Group agenda for today, the meeting agenda for today, we as a stakeholder group requested that we not have sort of a presentation or an update or any sort of formal presentation from ESSAC. So it is a bit incumbent upon us now to help explain what it is that we'd like to hear from and hear about. So I think I can expect that name collisions and SEC 62 may be one. There are some other issues on the screen, so I'm going to open this up and ask for input from the registry stakeholder group members. Anyone? Okay, Reg, please.
I keep doing that. I have some questions for Jazz about the name collision. They can be public or they can be private later. But yes, name collisions is my vote.
Okay, thanks, Reg. Anyone else? Any other issues that we'd like to talk about with ESSAC? I don't see any. All right, so Patrick, over to you. Why don't we go ahead and sort of kick off whatever update you have on name collision, SEC 62 being the most recent output on the issue. Anything else that you'd like to sort of illuminate on that?
So thank you. I think that's a good way of moving forward. So the week before, let's start by doing this. Everyone that is a member of ESSAC, can you please stand up? Okay. So what we have on the agenda and other issues that you have that we don't have time to talk about, try to catch any of these people and talk with them. For example, what ESSAC is, how you become a member, and whatever else procedures. Anyone can answer those questions. So what I will do is that there are two reports that we released the previous week, and the first one was SEC 62 and the other one SEC 63 about root key rollover. Let's start by talking about this, because I think both of them might actually be interesting for you. Don't forget the root zone key rollover issue. So let's just do a very brief walkthrough of SEC 62. 4, please. The first thing I will say before fast-forwarding to the recommendations is that when we in this report talk about name collision, we refer to a situation where you have two names where the usage and the meaning of the name is not ambiguous. When the collision is when you can have multiple interpretation of the name, and one of them is delegating the public DNS. You can, of course, have a collision where none of the two names are in the public DNS, but this report is specifically about the case when one of them is the public DNS and the other one is somewhere else or used for some other kind of purpose. This advice is about high-risk strings, trial delegation, root zone monitoring capability, and emergency rollback capability. And in all of these cases, what we are doing is that we are telling people give suggestions on how to do the calculations of risk and benefits and harm and do risk calculation or how to design the scale that you're using, but we're not doing those calculations, just so that is clear. And now you can move forward to the slide which talks about recommendations. I think it's about 4 or 5 slides forward. There. So the recommendations we have is the first one is that ICANN should work with the wider internet community, at least IAB and IETF, to identify what strings are appropriate to reserve for private namespace use and what type of private namespace use is appropriate. Should it be on the TLD level or should it be on other levels where certain names should not be allowed to be registered? Next slide, please. Recommendation 2. In the context of talking about trials, it's really important that I can explicitly consider the following questions and clearly articulate the choices. And that has to do with the purpose of the trial, the operation of the trial, emergency rollback, which means if the trial has to end prematurely, and also, when the trial is over, what are you going to use the result for? How do you make the decision on what to do? Next slide, please. Recommendation 3. ICANN should explicitly consider under what circumstances undelegation of TLD is the appropriate mitigation for a security or stability issue. And finally, ICANN should work in consultation with the community, in particular the root zone management partners, to create additional processes or update existing processes to accommodate the potential need for rapid reversal of the delegation of a TLD. So those are the recommendations, and now open up for questions.
Okay, thanks very much, Patrick. Questions? Ray.
Hello, Ray Fassett. In relation to the word trial, is the trial relative to the TLD itself or second-level domains that may be considered higher risk and trialing those? I'm not sure which framework you're using the word trial.
Can you go back one slide, please? Thank you. Forward? Yeah, it's hard with the delay in these kind of technology systems. We probably use that internet thing, right? That's a very good question. We are not specifically saying anything about that because that we feel is part of the purpose of the trial and what you are going to test. What we are looking at regarding trial is that we see that there are specifically two main categories of trials. The first one is that you actually do add the first kind of trial is when you look at what DNS queries you will get. That in turn to a name server. That in turn can be divided in two different kind of sub-trials. One is just by looking at logs for queries for domain names that doesn't exist. The second one is that you actually are adding the domain names to the DNS, and you look at what queries you get to the DNS. The second main category of a trial is that you actually add a mail server, you add a service that actually responds positively to actual connections using those domain names, and you evaluate the logs from the application layer communication instead. So we are talking in much, much more general terms and not specifically about any of the two.
Okay, thanks, Patrick. Ray, did you have any follow-up?
Yes, Ray Fassett. The last slide, if you can go to the last slide. The very last one. Yes, that one. Has your team, I'm sure you have or maybe haven't, I don't know, and apologize for the very basic kind of questions here, but did you consider, would there be a point in time after a year, 2 years, 3 years, the TLD has been operation where it is past this so-called maybe trial period, and like I couldn't imagine rolling back .com today. For any reason whatsoever. So did you consider a point in time when a TLD would be past that stage of needing a rollback?
One of the reasons that we wrote this recommendation is that we don't see an agreement on that in the community. Some people have the opinion that as soon as you do even if you put the DNA, the domain name that is going to be used in the future, as soon as that is put in the live DNS, that is already too late. So some people do believe that the only way to really see what's happening is just to do tests in closed environments, not even connect to the internet. That's one end of the scale. The other end of the scale are people that say, well, we can never say never that there might be catastrophe even as bad, so we need to roll back .com. That is sort of the other end of the scale. To many people, neither of those two are really realistic, and we are somewhere in between. Okay. So what we are pointing out, a little bit more serious part, the serious piece of the answer. We think what you just asked is something that is really important to know before you are thinking about using a tool like this as a mitigation method against some kind of incident. Because whenever you are making a decision to use a mitigation method where undelegation of a TLD is one of them, you need to make sure that the result of using the mitigation tool actually have the desired effect. First of all, as we are pointing out in recommendation number 4, and as all of us working with DNS know, even if you remove a domain name from the authoritative servers, it takes a while for caches to be empty and all those kind of things. And that together with the impact, which means that you actually are blocking the service for people or parties that actually use the domain names, that means that the harm might actually be quite large. It might take some time for the domain name to be removed, which means that maybe the harm is greater than the benefit. And that is exactly what our recommendations say, that you need to make sure that the undelegation mitigation method is described so well in advance so that whoever is to make the decision on using this tool know what they are doing.
Okay, thanks, Patrick. Thanks, Ray. Any other questions? Reg, did I see your hand? Okay, so Reg and then Jordan.
So as an introductory question, I'd like to ask if you had anything to do with the lists that were just published yesterday, because I have some questions about how they were tabulated.
No.
Okay, thanks, Reg. Jordan, and then Jeff.
Thanks. I have sort of a maybe metaphysical question about the role of the SSAC in this conversation and in this set of issues. I think there's a number of very useful recommendations here. I think, you know, ICANN should explicitly consider under what circumstances undelegation of a TLD is the appropriate mitigation. I personally was under the impression that SSAC would be a body that would not only recommend that ICANN figure that out, but would actually help figure out what the answer should be as well. So I guess as a first point, I'm sort of curious what you guys view the role of ESSAC being in helping to answer these questions in addition to posing them.
Okay, that's actually a good question. Thank you very much. We are looking at things from specifically technical stability and robustness issues of the internet. There are many other sort of parameters that has to be taken into account. Very specific kind of legal, contractual, business, economical, other areas, which is not within the purview or charter of ESSAC. So we don't find that we don't have the expertise and we don't have all the data needed to actually do a complete calculation of the risk and benefit. So what we can do, though, is that we can provide, as we are trying to do, from a technical and robustness standpoint, we know that this is very important to make those kind of sort of plans, whether that is dominated by business arguments or what it is. That's sort of part of the calculation. So we don't. That is one of the reasons why we are stopping here and not doing the actual calculation ourselves.
So that's a fair point. I can understand why you guys wouldn't feel that the ESSAC is either chartered or capable of perhaps fully answering some of these questions, some of which have policy or business implications beyond purely the technical issues. I guess the question is, my reading of the report probably is that it provides sufficient framework in order to help understand, you know, these are the steps you should go through in order to think about these questions. But there's still, I think, a number of remaining technical inputs that would be helpful to anyone considering a final decision here. And I imagine you guys as security and stability experts and the body that ICANN has in order to get advice on these topics would be incredibly helpful to have ongoing engagement with you. And it seems like the model we have right now is not awesome in that, you know, some part of ICANN, you know, may ask a question of you guys and you guys go off and write reports, and the report may or may not be quite the inputs that are needed by that body in order to, you know, go on to the next decision. So how do we get a more, I guess, bilateral, ongoing dialogue between the ESSAC and the community in order to make sure that we can get just-in-time information from you guys in addition to periodic reports?
Yeah. First of all, one of the things that you're pointing out, which is completely true, is that we in ESSAC, just because we produce our output in a consensus-based process, and one thing that is very hard to do in a consensus-based process is to have explicit dates for delivery of when you have reached consensus of some kind of wording. Because of that, we believe that we are most powerful when we are helping to sort of design a process that is to be used or evaluate the output of an open process, where we can say whether we do believe, for example, that a consequence analysis is actually cover the whole process, whether more or less, so we feel that we do the best work if we sort of are more like an audit to a running process. So, and for example, if you look at namespace collision issues, we pointed out the first time formally that these namespace collision issues happened in September 2010. But probably that was, we know that this is partly our fault that we didn't flag that the community or ICANN didn't do much about it until spring of 2013. So to some degree, we lost 2.5 years. Before sort of the process started to run. But for example, the way we work at ESSAC and the way we are most comfortable is when we do not have to participate. Do you see what I mean? So for example, we hope that the policy development process and the PDPs together with ICANN and ICANN staff doing various things like the DS report, that should be good enough. And then maybe we can say whether we do believe that was good enough or not. The situation that we are in at the moment, that people wait for answers for us, we are extremely uncomfortable for the same reasons that you point out.
So just to clarify, it sounds like you guys, the suggestion you would make is that you would be at the start and the end of the process, essentially. You would pose an issue, the community would go off and work on it, and then you guys would double-check the work at the end. But we wouldn't try to engage you with various little checks along the way in order to triangulate on the work.
Yes, one thing that I, as the chair of ESSAC, don't mind people doing is that we have lots of good technical people, both which are member of ESSAC, members of RSAC, and also active in the whole ICON community. So I myself is a strong believer of using the expertise that exists, and it should not in the PDPs that we have in ICON. I do not believe that advisory bodies like ESSAC should be used for anything else than when it's really needed as an audit, but the main process should be separate.
Okay, thanks very much, Patrick. Thanks, Jordan. Jeff?
Yeah, and Jordan actually asked a bunch of the questions I was kind of asking, and let me ask it a little different way. Do you have, you've showed us what work you've produced in the last, I don't know how many months that was, for 60 through 64. Do you have a pipeline or something that you could show the community as to things that you're working on, with the understanding you may or may not come to a consensus position, but just to, as an applicant, let's say, we'd like to know if there's any other issues you're working on that may all of a sudden come out and, oh no, now we got to turn to another issue that may involve security and stability and may involve another delay or may involve something else. It'd be great to know in advance, kind of like a 6-month, 1-year kind of pipeline document of what you're working on.
There. So these are the things that we're working with at the moment that you see on the slide. So we have a standing ongoing work on the membership committee, the DNSSEC workshop, which is tomorrow. We have then separate groups working on identifier abuse metrics. We are doing an outreach to law enforcement, work together with them. We had a workshop in Bali at the Internet Governance Forum, so that is now concluding because it's after the IDF. We have one work party on large-scale abuse using the DNS infrastructure that is also close to finish their report. The report of the large-scale abuse using the DNS will most certainly be published before the end of the year. And then we had two groups that closed the previous week. So at the moment, if I look at my own budget and resources, I have 3 open slots. And we are at this meeting, compared to all the other meetings, listening on people. Like, we have our idea what we could do, but we have not finished our prioritization. So input from, for example, all of you this and the next week and during the ICANN meeting is actually helping us to do the prioritization. So to answer your question, whether we have a list of what we're going to do, we don't have that because we are currently producing it. So we're in a very, very, we are very lucky at the moment.
Okay, thanks, Patrick. Thanks, Jeff. So I think that one of the questions that Jeff had is there sort of a way or a place or a location where we, you know, the community could see what the ongoing work, what's in the pipeline, what might be coming, to know better when there's sort of slots available. And then we probably need to wrap up quickly.
Yeah, we have our, for example, we do have our open meeting at the ICANN normally, and I think this week it's on Thursday morning, where we have an open, completely open meeting where people can come with suggestions. It's also the case that what we are currently doing is also available on the ICANN web page, just like other groups. Now, of course, it's as confusing to find data that as on my own web page, so I'm not complaining to anyone. One thing that we have been doing, though, together with ICANN and together with ALAC, is that we are now testing a new tool as part of the MyICANN that tracks our recommendations, so you can see exactly what is happening and where they are in the whole ICANN process. That also gives an indication of what we are going to do, what we might do next. I'm happy to work with Julie to try to find more specific pointers. But at the moment, the pointers would point to something that is pretty empty.
Okay, thanks, Patrick. I think you have at the most 5 minutes left, so I think we probably need to wrap up on the name collision issue. We will have 15 minutes with Jeff Schmidt from Jazz Advisors next. But Patrick, did you want to talk at all? Russ, you want to talk at all about SEC 63? Sorry, 63, key rollover. Thanks.
And do you know? Can you go forward to SEC 63, please?
Whoa.
Not slide number.
Not slide 63.
Just back up a little bit. It's the new.
I think it's.
Yeah, back up. Back a lot.
Back.
Back.
There. All right. Good. Okay. I'll run through these quickly. In fact, we did brief it at the last meeting, and there were a few interactions. We had not finished, so we didn't have the recommendations. So next slide, please. And this one is really an overview of what's in the document. I want to go through them quickly here. So next. And there on this slide is the actual URL for the text. So I urge anyone to please take a look at it. The document itself is around 40 pages, but there are some concise parts at the beginning and in the conclusions if you want to skip the whole detail. But the details, I think, are worth reading, especially for this constituency. Next, please. Oh, okay. Back one. Just a little. Okay. There. Okay. So the first recommendation is that the ICANN staff, in coordination with the other Root Zone management partners, should immediately undertake a significant worldwide communications effort to publicize that the Root Zone KSK rollover, the motivation, and the process that's going to be used. Publicize that as widely as possible, because we have seen, and in our various discussions with folks, it, even though it's happening, it's almost certainly going to come, almost no one outside of the core community knows it's coming. So publicity and communications is important. Next, please. The ICANN staff should lead and coordinate or otherwise encourage the creation of a collaborative representative test bed. And I won't read the details of it, but we believe that having a cooperative testing effort involving as many people as possible and as show interest will be to the benefit of not only ICANN and the Root Zone operation, but of all parties that are participating to identify potential problems that could occur prior to the actual rollover itself. Third recommendation, and again, this is ICANN staff recommendation towards the ICANN staff, should lead, coordinate, otherwise encourage creation of clear and objective metrics, because the identification of what to look for, what to count before you get into the rollover is really important, because you can set up and establish your counting and your way to describe what you mean by breakage, because a lot of people use that term and almost everyone uses it differently. So get it defined ahead of time. Next, please. The ICANN staff lead, coordinate, otherwise encourage the development rollback procedures. If something should happen to go wrong in the rollover, we need to know in advance how to go backwards. And so this is a recommendation to make sure we do the proper planning to know that that is in place. And then the fifth recommendation is really towards a data collection recommendation and a collection of information that is useful for future KSK rollovers. Now, that's it for the specifics of the report, and those that may have been paying attention to the details will notice that I said nothing about algorithm rollover, and in the text of the report, that is clearly excluded, and so this is strictly the KSK, the key rollover itself.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Russ. That's extremely helpful information and a very great sort of brief and effective summary. Just want to open it up, see if anybody has any questions about SAC 63 and the KSK rollover recommendations. Anyone? Jordan.
Sorry. Just to that last point, algorithm rollover, does that mean you think that it's currently impossible, or that it's just like you need to do more work on it, or like what's the state of the art on algorithm rollover?
There we go. Right now, as we work through this report, the conclusion was that we wanted to and needed to get the report done with respect to the key signing key rollover. The algorithm rollover was discussed early on, and the conclusion of the ESSAC work party that carried through to the final report was that it's really a little early to actually address the formalness in a formal sense of what you would do for an algorithm rollover. There's no belief that there is a mandated time or you know, at any point in particular point that it has to be done, though it is something that, as the work party discussions that did get discussed, and we decided to not include it in the report. And I can't really speak to your specific question about do people think it's, you know, possible, impossible. We just don't know at this point. We don't have an opinion.
Thank you, Russ. Any other questions? I know our SSAC colleagues have to scoot to another meeting, so I'd just like to thank you all very much for your hard work and your participation with us today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and I'd like to invite Jeff Schmidt from Jazz Global Advisors up to join us here. And we'll have 15 minutes, maybe a little more if he can afford it and if we can. We've got a few other agenda items to get to in our regular business before we move to the registrars at 4. Let's go ahead and Jeff will come up here. So again, as we switch gears here a little bit, not too much, just want to welcome Jeff Schmidt from Jazz Global Advisors. I want to note that there was an SSR briefing conducted by ICANN staff. I'm losing track of days. I think it was yesterday. And Jeff participated in that. And his, I think, key focus is that Jazz Global Advisors has been retained by ICANN to conduct or to develop the collision occurrence management framework. That's, I think, what he's available to talk with us about today and respond to any questions. So, Jeff, over to you.
Good afternoon. So, I would encourage you, if you're interested in the string collision issue, to look at the slides from yesterday. I'm not going to, if for any of you that weren't in the session or weren't aware, I won't walk you through 45 minutes worth of material that was adequately covered yesterday. I just wanted to hit a couple of highlights in this session and then really, you know, make myself available for questions. Briefly, the string collision issue has been carved up into a couple of pieces. The current SLD block list approach, the temporary approach, is out there, and that's not our focus. What we're focused on is developing the long-term solution or the permanent solution. ICANN has asked us to create a framework for evaluating the string collision issue on a individual per TLD basis to create a deterministic, repeatable approach so that we can collectively bring closure to this issue. Our framework, will effectively break up the applied force strings into groups based on qualitative and quantitative metrics that I don't know right now, and then apply recommended mitigation packages to those. So you can imagine if your string is in bucket number one, you're going to need mitigation package C, and mitigation package C may contain this, this, and this. That's the general idea, so that you know what to expect when we come out of this. The timeline for our report, it will go to public comment in January. I believe it's ICANN's intent to have this issue closed around the Singapore meeting in March. We are working very hard to make our process open and available so that you don't wind up with a 50-page document in a public comment period 3 months from now without visibility into what's going on between now and then. So I would encourage everybody that is interested in the issue to subscribe to the DNSOARC collisions list. That was the epicenter of these discussions for the last couple of months, and we've decided to continue using that list. We're active on that list. We will continue to be active on that list. It's a great place to talk. Go look at the archives to see this issue. We are very open and very interested to hearing feedback, ideas, concerns. If you have data, if you want us to look at something, please send us a note. post it to the collisions list, send a smoke signal, carrier pigeon. We want to really be open and give everybody a sense of what's going on. Also, at key points during our study, when we have something that we want to float, we're going to blog about it on Domain Insight, and we will then be monitoring and participating in the comment period as well. So this is a mechanism for us to, again, tighten up the comment period, get involvement better, sooner, faster, and then when we have a work product for public comment in January, the newness and the churn at that point will be lower. So we're excited to hear from you. We have a couple of asks of the community. One is we are actively looking for case studies. Anybody that has experience with a DNS namespace collision, know somebody that has experience with a DNS namespace collision, thinks they heard a rumor of somebody that had experience with a DNS namespace collision, we would like to know about it. It is incumbent on us to learn more about the consequences. The frequency has been analyzed quite a bit over the last 6 months, but very little is known at this point about the actual consequences. And so, you know, one of the ways that we would like to do that is to get case studies. There have been lots of delegations, lots of TLD delegations, lots of delegations inside delegated namespaces, lots of opportunities for all sorts of collisions. I'm sure they've happened, and we would like to know about it. The second ask is we will be preparing a survey. The objective of our survey is to broaden the feedback, the solicitation as widely as possible, get as much data from as many different kinds of folks internationally that we can. And so I would ask for your help in responding to the survey and also passing it around to get as much coverage as we can. Thank you. Hey, Jeff.
Okay, thanks very much, Jeff. Jeff, go ahead. And any others want to get in the queue, show your hands.
Thanks, Jeff. We can go back and forth. I don't envy the tough task you have in front of you, and I'm glad you're doing that work. But just to kind of clarify in my mind what's going to happen, are you going to go through each string, like each TLD, and say, so let's say there's a TLD that's got 20,000 names on this list. Are you going to specifically say for each string, we recommend these 10,000 go in this category, you do that with, these 5,000, or are you establishing a framework for someone on ICANN staff to actually apply that formula to figure out which names within?
So we have to be careful when we're talking about strings. So the second level strings, which I think is what you were talking about, right? So those are I hate to be flip. I actually kind of don't really care about those. What we're concerned about is a repeatable framework that can be applied on the TLD by TLD basis, TLD strings. So the second level strings, that block list is kind of a separate strategy to let things go quickly now, right? But what we're focused on is, you know, your application for .jeff, right? What do you do as .jeff? Not forgetting about your 50,000 lists or whatever it is. We are conscious of the fact that people are going to be coming in to the framework in various states, delegated, undelegated, choosing to use the block list, not choosing to use the block list, et cetera. But our approach is not to refine or augment or leverage the block list. We're kind of starting on a clean slate. Like, what should we really do for this TLD? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense, but I'm just trying to figure out from a timeline perspective, if you're going to come out and say, let's hypothesize, okay, .nyc, you can launch and you got to take a certain category of names and put it in this classification, or a certain number of names, put it in this classification, certain number of names in this classification. Is there going to be work for ICANN staff or someone else to do the application? And if so, we're just trying to figure out how long that's going to delay, because we'll have a final report in March, but does that mean that we can have an expectation that if we have been delegated, in April we can carry that out.
All right, I understand. Thanks. So our framework is designed to be a repeatable framework to get applied to the TLDs, okay? How that happens and when that happens actually is a function, you know, of ICANN. Oh, we will deliver the report, and then how that gets applied to the specific strings is to be determined. But I apologize. When I said earlier bucketing the strings, I meant bucketing the TLDs, not the SLDs. So there will be, you know, so Home and Corp are fascinating, right? They're very heavily collided, but for very different reasons. Right, so Corp, is intentional. People configured their networks thinking that they could have that, right? Because a vendor told them that they could, right? So that's a very different use case than, for example, Home. Home is being appended by a CPE very helpfully, right? So people don't know that they're, you know, that these queries are occurring. So you know, we want to group up the strings, and you can imagine a null bucket, right? An IDN that's never ever been queried, or you know, been queried 5 times in 8 years, right? So you can imagine seeing some use cases based on some qualitative and quantitative measures requiring different mitigations. That's when I was talking about grouping. Does that help?
It does help. The community needs to understand that even if this report comes out in March, what it sounds like is that things are going to have to be applied, most likely by ICANN staff, and you're not talking really about the end of March. You're talking about, in theory, months and months after that to actually apply it. And that's, I think the community needs to understand that and probably needs to understand it today so that they could comment on it, because some people are under the impression that the report will come out that's going to solve all the problems, and then April comes and ICANN's just going to go, okay, everyone, here you go. But I think what I'm hearing, which is what I feared, is that the report's going to come out, it's going to recommend an implementation, and then ICANN's going to have to figure out exactly how to implement it, and we could be talking about many, many, many more months of not being able to delegate certain second levels within a TLD.
So I would actively encourage comments around the implementability and timelines and latency and such of the mitigation packages for all the reasons that you just said. Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Ray?
Hi, Ray Fassett. Thanks, Jeff. Right now, probably all of the new applicants are looking at their lists, and they're thinking the challenge facing them and their backers and their supporters and those waiting for it to hit the market and excited about it and what have you, is how do I get names off of this list? It doesn't seem to me the work that you're going to be doing, which is going to be extensive, it sounds to me, but it's not going to look at that question at all. The work that you're going to be doing is not going to be an exercise of how a TLD that maybe launches in November, December, and has been operating for 3 or 4 months, your output is not going to help that registry answer the question of how to get names that are blocked off the block list. A lot of the names are gibberish. Everybody can see that. But then, of course, there are some certain important ones, let's say, sprinkled in. And that's going to be where the operators are focusing there, the business people, not necessarily the technologists, the business people, the marketing people, you know, people that have to actually bring the TLD to market in some way that gains adoption. And they're just going to want to know a simple answer. How do I get this name off the list? And is any of your work going to address that question?
In a word, no. So we are not, the project is not reducing the list. The project is eliminating the list, right? The list was a stopgap. So our output is no list, not you want to take off 7 things from your list. Here's how. That is not.
That was a good clarification. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Ray. Thanks, Jeff. Maxim?
Maxim Azoba, FireTeed. The important thing is probability of reoccurrence of such events. Because if we put our business things at risk for highly improbable events, we have serious damages for business. We might be sued by big brands for preventing them from conducting business. And it's a high risk measured by money loss. So could you please describe if there is any chance we have estimates of recurrence probability for these strings?
So the question was, Maxim, maybe you could just, again, boil it down to that last question so they can...
The last bit. So, is it possible to measure recurrence probability for these strings? Because it's important. Either way, you just can't... You take all spirit out of this. I have some experience in physics, and we have measurements when you take half of data. It just means nothing.
Yeah, so the question is, and if I may broaden it, getting more data about the strings on your list? Is that the...
No, evaluating probability of reoccurrence of these risky situations.
So... With respect to the SLD blocking strategy, that list is what it is, and the there's not a current plan to provide more data, frequency data, anything about that. In the larger project, right, in the framework project, absolutely the our intent is to understand why these are happening, right. So understanding the use case, understanding the source in terms of actor, the source in terms of software or hardware, all of those things are then certainly related to, frequency of reoccurrence and other factors. That's all, certainly within our remit to understand why these are happening and then how to stop them.
To use simple language, it means that this list is not relevant to our reality. Because without probability, we do not know if it ever happens.
Right, so the block list, is that what you're the block list? So the block list has happened at least once, right? And that's all we know, and that's it.
Yeah, because it's history, and history, in our case, it doesn't influence what happened next. So we are studying past, and thus it would create dangerous incidents in past, not in future. So your measurements are not relevant to our future program.
Okay. Thanks, Maxim. Francisco, did you want to chime in?
Thank you, Kit. I just would like to clarify a point regarding the question from Ray before. I was talking with Jeff. I think there was a slight misunderstanding on the question. The idea is that once you have we have the framework, we'll apply to each of the proposed new ETLDs and define the mitigation measures that have to be applied per category of collision. And therefore, when you apply the mitigation measures for a specific category, the strings that are inside that category can be removed from the block. So you can remove the blocking from them. So in that sense, I think that will answer your question. You will be able to remove strings from the block list. I believe the only difference in what you were saying and what Jeff was saying is the category is what Jeff will be focusing on as opposed to individual strings.
Yeah, that's a good clarification. I mean, there's an opportunity to get some bonus removals, basically, right, as we understand something. We're not going to keep it secret if we understand the source of some query. If there is an opportunity to get some information out there that would help whittle down the list, then we will. That's not the focus of our framework, is to not have a list, but certainly if information emerges along the way.
I think if I'm understanding correctly, the focus of your efforts is to create different categories, column buckets of worry. it could you may come up with four different buckets or five, and then each bucket will have sort of a remedy, a prescription that I think, if I'm not trying to put words in your mouth now, but then you will recommend that the registry operator implement this prescription, and upon showing in some capacity that you have done this, then you have remedied the ill. That's the plan.
Okay, thanks. So we've got a few others in the queue. I've got Ken, Jeff, did you want to get in the queue?
Yes, please.
Okay, so Ken, then Jeff, then Ching.
That should. Hi, my name is Ken Stubbs. Going back to this, I'm sorry I'm not a strong techie, but it would seem to me that it would be important for us to understand the criteria for the creation of these buckets, because if the criteria, in fact, it ties into what the gentleman here was talking about, is it based on probability of reoccurrence? In other words, if we had a string, an obscure string that was typed in 10 years ago that's on that day in the life list, and nothing's happened in the last 10 years, we can assume with a relatively high probability, I assume we could, statistically we should be able to work it out, that it's got a high probability that it has a low probability of a reoccurrence, and we can use a mitigation plan that takes that into effect. You know, knowing that there's always the chance, but, you know, what I'm worried about is that somebody's going to say, well, the only way we can create a probability that we're comfortable with is just block it forever. And, you know, I would really have to have, and as a businessman, I would want to have, you'd have to make a very strong case for that. And I think it's important for us to understand the basis for the creation of those buckets, so that at least we either have an opportunity, I won't use the word for appeal, but at least we have an opportunity to work this into our business plan. And if I'm being redundant, I apologize because I came in just a couple of minutes late, but these mitigation plans, how far behind the initial things are you planning on rolling those out? In other words, if we agree to go with the initial block list, you know. Thank you.
Ah, there we are. Thank you. So, yes, I agree about the importance of, you know, understanding and thinking very reasonably about the bucketing. I would imagine if I were to wager, the, you know, bucketing would probably be the most heavily commented on part of, you know, of our paper before, during, and after. So I'm in agreement with you. We will, you know, be reasonable, be open to commentary and feedback, but it is important, obviously, in how these are put into the buckets. The second piece with respect to the timing of the mitigation plans, so that, you know, after the report, you know, goes to public comment and is finalized, the, you know, the timing of getting off of the SLD strategy and onto, you know, the long-term strategy, you know, I think at this point is to be determined, in, pursuant to the earlier conversations. Referring to Jeff, yeah.
Hope. I hope we don't get into a situation where the concern becomes so high to get an incredibly high probability rate that we suddenly have to study this for another 2.5 years to get some sort of a level. Let's measure it in terms of a practical.
Just to follow on there, I mean, we're talking a lot about probability and frequency, right? I mean, and that's been the dimension that's been studied. But I want to emphasize again, we're missing, you know, the boat, right? We're missing consequences. Right. So we need, you know, before we can talk about what to do and what's on the good list and the bad list, we need to have a much, much better understanding of consequences. It's not just probability.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. So in the queue, I've got Jeff Newman, Ching Chow, and Reg Levy, and Craig. And then we probably need to wrap this one up, although I'm not going to cut it off in any way. Jeff, Ching, Reg, Craig.
So on the timing, and we're all realizing things are going to take a lot longer, I would ask of Krista and ICANN staff, you know, because I can imagine even if we come up with these strategies, then the next, you know, the implementation will look like, okay, you got to wait for an email from the customer support portal to be invited to implement your mitigation strategy. Then you got to go through legal to have the contract drafted to implement your mitigation strategy. Then you got to wait for a signature, right, and week after week after week after week. I'm not sure there's a better way to do it, but the point is that people need to realize this is not a 3-month thing. You know, come end of March, this is going to be implemented, and all of a sudden they're going to come out with a recommendation, and boom, you know. So I'm going to ask ICANN to think about different ways to make it easier and faster to go to the new mitigation strategy, because if we have to wait, like I said, for someone to get around for support to send an email, us to respond through the customer support portal, wait another week for, you know, all this other stuff, that's even more and more delay, and this is starting to hurt us. So, again, just a lot of time.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. Ching?
Thank you, Keith. Just very simply allow me to use 30 seconds to read some of on the block list of the donuts.game IDM. So let me tell you what's on their block list. 360, one of the largest game sites. 4399, one of the largest game sites. Apple, HTC, iPad, single character M, NBA, Nokia, QQ, the largest instant message sites. There's an IDN of Android, IDN of wife changing. It's kind of interesting. It's a game. IDN of IDN of Angry Birds. So that's on the list. I'm just using this opportunity to share this.
For the record, we will have no mitigation strategy for wife changing.
Okay. Thanks, Ching. Reg, and then Craig.
Thanks, and thank you, Jeff, for coming, and thank you for the presentation yesterday. That was extremely informative. My takeaway from yesterday is that you were going to categorize the SLD strings into buckets. Today, you said you're very intrigued by Home and Corp because they're really interesting problems, but that's a TLD string. So my first question is, can we clarify the way we're using string, and which buckets are you planning, or is it both?
Yeah, so good, and thanks. That was, I think there was some confusion about this here as well. So the objective of the framework, right, is to be able to deliver a mitigation package, right, to applicants for .jeff at the TLD basis, right? So that there will be bucketing at the TLD basis, absolutely. Right, because that's how you get to the finish line. As a part of understanding what's going on, we will, you know, necessarily have to bucket up the strings. For example, you know, more than 30% of the data set is comprised of random and algorithmic strings. Right, so we have to understand those. The Chrome 10s are well understood, but there's, you know, six other ones. So as a necessary prerequisite to understanding what we're looking at, we are going to have to bucket SLDs as well.
Thank you. Okay, so understanding that, I would like to make two requests of the report that you'll eventually issue, is that when you bucket TLDs, that you actually expressly state TLD, and I'm going to use XYZ because it's an example, but I don't mean that against whoever applied for .XYZ in the room. TLD XYZ is in group A. TLD ABC is in group B, as opposed to the rules for TLDs that belong in group A are. So that's my first request. That is my request. The other thing is slightly going back to what you said to Ray about the fact that you're not removing strings from the block list, but the point is to remove the block list altogether. The way I understand that is you would like to remove strings from the block list. You just want to remove all of the strings from the block list so that nothing is blocked. We've figured out, we've understood what the hash keys are. We've understood Chrome 10s, obviously. And things are no longer blocked. Is that a correct understanding?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I would characterize it the other way. We are not starting with the block lists, right? We want to actually understand the problem. The block lists are a symptom, yeah.
And do you know how that block list, were you involved in the compilation of that block list?
Yeah, it's basically the report that we put in the public comment period where we listed everything, yeah.
Okay, so is the block list comprised of every string or only of, pardon me, every SLD string, or is it only comprised of strings that appeared over a certain threshold number of times?
So the block list is every string that ever appeared anywhere ever.
Okay, thank you. Craig.
It's on now? Okay, so I understand what the report is supposed, what the framework is supposed to do, that it's the other path away from reserving all these second level domains. With regard to, I've heard the term bucketing now several times, and are you saying that ATLD could have, Are the mitigation strategies based upon the classification of the second level domain name? Meaning, could there be four mitigation strategies for one TLD and three mitigation strategies for another TLD? Like, help me understand what you mean, what bucketing means.
All right. So yeah, when I use the word bucketing, let me say it differently, and hopefully it'll help. The objective is to have a per string plan that is, you know, implementable, reasonable, time definite, all things to bring closure to the issue. So the objective is to have a plan. If I applied for .jeff.
You said per string plan.
Per TLD string. Thank you. So if I applied for .jeff, I have a plan. And that plan is comprised of a series of mitigations. I don't know exactly what those are going to look like. I don't know exactly how many, right? But one can imagine a very low risk situation where the mitigation package may be nothing. Where a string has never been queried, and so the mitigation package is vigilance, right? All the way to something that, you know, for whatever reason is more interesting and may include something like a trial delegation.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Craig. A couple more questions, and then we probably need to wrap up. We do have some other business that we need to get to. So Ray and then Ken.
Thank you, Sherry. Last quick question. Your exercise is only going to look at the new TLDs that were applied for. It's not going back and looking at TLDs that have been in the root and operating for years. Is that correct?
No, we are going to look at. We can't go back and retroactively. There will not be a mitigation plan for a previously delegated string, right? But we are looking at, .xxx, .asia, the four CCs. There's a lot of really great data out there where we can see, what happened in the past. There's a couple of gTLDs where diddle data exists before and after. We have other data sets available. So we're looking at everything. But they won't know. There won't be a plan for them to do something.
Yeah, if this question is out of line, then I'll ask Keith to just kill it. But years ago, it was always my understanding, and I'm going to use a word that may bring terror into the minds of some people here, but isn't a concept like CypheFinder originally designed for exactly this type of approach, where somebody were to type in one of these strings you're talking about, be redirected to a page that would offer a mitigation strategy or something along that line? Why do we have to go through all this when we could go through something that's really relatively my understanding? I'm not a tech. And it's not my technical people. It's people I talk to who have been involved in architecture for a long time. Why couldn't we use something as elementary as that? Is it politics?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have an answer directly. I will say indirectly that, certainly over the years, a lot of research has been done on this topic and related topics, right? So research that was done around that situation where you mentioned is certainly, on the table for us to review at this point. Absolutely.
Okay, thanks. Any final questions on... Chuck, you need to use that mic. So Chuck has a question.
It'll be real brief. Are you suggesting, Ken, that we resubmit a CypheFinder proposal?
Okay, thanks everybody. Unless there's any final questions, I'd like to thank Jeff Schmidt for joining us today, and Francisco, appreciate your time. Okay, we have just over 30 minutes before we need to, actually probably a little bit less, before we break to go join the registrars at 4 o'clock. So there's a few things that we probably have to get to on today's agenda and some other things that might be nice to do but may not get to. See, microphone's blinking again. So bear with me a second.
Can you have done this before?
Okay, so going back to the GNSO and ICANN updates, there's a few things that I think we're able to remove from the agenda that we skipped over earlier. Eros, IRTP, I think we can not talk about who is unless there's any reason to. We have ICANN meeting planning working group. Paul, is there anything that you would like to provide an update there, or is this something we could skip over? All right, so we're skipping over the meeting planning working group. We have policy and implementation working group. Chuck, is there something that you would like to provide an update on briefly on policy and implementation working group?
Oh, I'm sorry.
You needed the exercise, right, Keith?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, this is Chuck. Real brief, less than a minute. We have a session tomorrow afternoon, 4:45, till 6:15. And we're going to ask for feedback on policy implementation issues as we're starting the process. So it's an opportunity for you to answer some questions we're going to ask, and you can see that on the agenda. So if you can make it, it's an important issue for us. Please come.
Okay, thanks. Whoa. Thanks. Sorry, everybody. Thanks, Chuck. Comments, questions for Chuck on policy and implementation? Okay, no. Hand it over to Jonathan then for an update on GNSO review. She's got it.
Yeah, I'll be real short, as Jeff told me to be. Have I got power? Yeah. Power? Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, great. Sorry, it's difficult to hear back on this. I guess the main message is actually there's not a whole lot to do right now, but you should be aware of this activity because it can be open to interpretation in different ways. As the GNSO Council, in our meeting with the board, and some of you may have been there, we got an update from Ray Polzak, who heads the Structural Improvements Committee of the board and who will be leading the GNSO review, or at least initiating the GNSO review, according to a still-to-be-determined methodology. I'm going to meet with at least one of the councillors with Ray tomorrow, and we'll get further information and work with him. It'll be communicated to the council. We'll keep communicating it with the stakeholder group. But I just want to flag with this stakeholder group that we need to keep a close eye on that and inform our councillors and of our expectations, and we'll just have to see where it goes. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan. Hand that down to Ching, because the next item is translation and transliteration, contact information, PDP. Ching?
Thank you, Keith, and this is Ching again. I'll also be very brief. As you've heard this morning, the motion of this will be put on the table for the council tomorrow, and the work itself, actually, during the weekend session, we've just learned that a new EWG, the expert working group on this issue, is being formed, and they have, I believe, met on the past Monday, and it's led by Jim Galvin. I would look forward that in the next meeting they will keep us posted on what's happening. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Ching. Any questions or comments for Ching? No? Okay. So I think we're going to skip over the rest of the items that were in the GNSO / ICANN update. Move down to, I'm going to ask Paul to start thinking about anything we need to talk about related to public comments. If there's anything that we need to get to there that's something that's imminent or urgent, then start thinking about that so we can talk about it in a minute. In the meantime, is Philip Shepherd here? Philip, snuck up on me like that. Goodness. Sorry. Sherry told me you were here, and I was looking around the room. I didn't realize you'd snuck up on me. Anyway, thank you. So, Philip, I'm going to hand it over to you for an update to the group on the Evolution Working Group. So thank you. Thanks for joining us.
So thanks very much. We've just got some slides which will be coming up in a second. But just to get the background to this, as you recall, we had a meeting in Durban. I was representing the BRG, some colleagues also representing the .geos group, and it was initiating a discussion recognizing that of all the stakeholder groups in ICANN, this one is the most affected in terms of change, and therefore, a suggestion of Chuck, getting a group together of people just to think through what change may mean sounded like a useful idea, so we formed this working group on evolution. Created some short terms of reference, which in essence were saying, let's do a needs analysis, both the needs of new registries, but also looking at the needs of the existing registries, and just go from there then in terms of thinking what changes may be needed. So if we move to the next slide. You see then, since Durban, we met five times, each time just going through essentially one or sometimes pairing some of those terms of reference together just to see where we were, and have came up just to work fairly methodically and slowly just to try to understand some of the key underlying things and to keep stuff as general as possible. And we've come up now with a draft report which I hope you'll have seen and might have read. If not, it's relatively short and easy to do, but I'll take you through the key points of that in a second now. And that draft report has 11 recommendations. If we move to the next slide, we divide the recommendations into two categories. And the first we're just calling administrative recommendations. And essentially, they all stemmed from the recognition that this stakeholder group is going to get bigger. And bigger means we may need to do things in different ways. So the second set of recommendations is all about change of type of registries and different needs. And therefore, we thought it helpful to divide those into two categories. So these first six are all about change because of a change of size. The first two were some clarifying edits. Those particular bits of the charter refer to interest groups and observer groups. I think we all agree that it was probably just some editorial issues whereby some of the things that those groups can do was different, and we thought probably that was not intended, and it's just the way that maybe the charter had arranged, so that the suggestion those two things should be written to be an exact match. So essentially the ability to discuss, etc., of a what's called an interest group or an observer interest group would be identical. Second recommendation was to look at the quorum and recognition based on experience of larger groups. The larger the group gets, typically you need to reduce the quorum down to something that's going to be manageable because your typical attendance will be lower. And a recommendation there was that whereas it's 50% at the moment, it should go to a lower amount. And we didn't want to take a judgment at that point, but just to park that as a concept that would need to be done for practicality in order that you can make decision-making which can go forward and be meaningful. The third recommendation was about definition of an active member, which currently has two criteria to define it. And we also felt that going forward, just having one criteria to reflect the voting pattern of the member should be sufficient to define an active member, because the second category would be much more challenging in a larger and more diverse organisation. Fourth recommendation was really a manpower and resourcing one, to say, well, look, if you're going to have so many more people around, then perhaps you'll be able to reduce the burden on your officers, the chair, the alternate chair, and the treasurer, and therefore their terms could reduce to 1 year, because hopefully the pool of people able to do those would be larger. And stemming from that reduction becomes an associated change to the consecutive terms that would therefore be allowed, and how you would define a term. That's recommendation five. And finally, there was a relatively straightforward suggestion that there's just a slight missynchronization at the moment between the election dates cycle and the fiscal year, and maybe synchronizing those in a way that makes it simpler could be a helpful idea. So I can pause perhaps 2 seconds to take any questions on those recommendations before I move to the second set, might be helpful.
Thanks, Philip. Thanks for that that introduction. Any comments or questions? Anything to add? Staten?
Staten Hammock, United TLD. On item number 3, the definition of active members should be changed to reflect voting only. That means that if you are you're an inactive member if you are not a voting member. If you're not an active member, what other member are you besides observer? Is there another category? Oh.
Yes, I should Cherry is probably a better expert than I am on that. But I think the moment you have two categories of an only an active member can vote, and part of that's determined by the voting pattern, and part of it's determined by participation. And we thought that going forward, measuring participation is practical with a group of 10 or 20. Measuring participation of a group of potentially 1,800 is unlikely to be, and therefore we felt that should be the change.
Yeah. Can I take umbrage with that? I think from a practical standpoint, the perception of an active versus a non-active member, as you describe it here, there are many people that may very well have a situation where they are very active in the constituency, but because of the nature of the constituency system, they may very well be casting a vote in another constituency. We're going to have a lot of people with that position. I don't ever want to have a situation where we de-incentivize members in terms of their desire to participate. I think anyone who participates knowing they can't vote is one thing, but advertising that these people really don't have a, you know, we've prided ourselves. I would say if actions in the future don't stand in consistency with the ones in the past, we may have a problem. We always pride ourselves on our ability to deal with that kind of issues. And I think most of the members of the NTAG would agree that there's never been any barriers out there for them. Now, I could be wrong, and there may be people who don't feel that way, but I kind of hope that, you know, we encourage people to contribute and we measure the value of that contribution.
Okay, thanks, Ken. I've got Chuck Staton. That's it so far.
And this is Chuck. I want to respond to Ken. I don't think that this particular recommendation changes that at all. This was just a practical matter in terms of how we define active. So I think we're okay there. But keep in mind, these things will be refined and dealt with before they're finalized. The purpose now is to get some feedback and see if there's some reactions and certainly questions like you're asking.
That's what I was getting at when I asked the question. Thanks, Ken, for picking up on where I was going with that, because there will be members here, if not already, that also have representatives in other stakeholder group. And we know the rule is clear on only being able to vote in one, but we don't want to be labeled as an inactive participant merely because we're a non-voting member of the stakeholder group.
Sorry, just a second. Chuck again. Yeah, again, there's no intent of that. Keep in mind, the only time when the active category comes into play is when we take a vote. And the idea was, because as we grow, you get people that don't participate, and if you have got a quorum, and even if it's low, and you can't reach a quorum, you can't do business. So the idea was to put something in there to make sure we don't get in that situation.
I think the discussion has been interesting, and actually, although we did discuss the issue about voting in or choosing where you place your vote in different constituencies, I don't think actually we'd discussed that in relation to this point when we were there. So I think the point is taken, and we can probably move on that, because I think it needs to be looked at in its implications. So I'm not dying on that particular issue at all. And if we've done the admin recommendations, perhaps we'll just move on to the next page, because actually they're the much more interesting ones. So these were called structural recommendations. And the issue here is recognizing that there are going to be different types of member, different sizes, different motivations, etc. The first recommendation is a sort of short-term interim fix. So we realize that a lot of the stuff we're looking at had implications of either major thinking through as to what you wanted to do as a stakeholder group, and others started to have implications about reforming the entire GNSO, and therefore there were some timing issues. But one immediate issue that did come out of our needs analysis was that if it was possible for an existing group representing a certain type of registry could join as the group, as opposed to an individual member of that joining and then forming an interest group, which is the sort of the NTAG model, that will probably be quite a good interim fix. That could only be a quick interim fix if that group had essentially no votes and perhaps a rather low fee to recognize that. But it would allow participation while the much more interesting issue of voting took place. So let me just run through the rest, and then we'll take questions on all of them, because they do sort of link, really. Recommendation 8 is a rather key one. Further work is needed on the issue of the voting structure of the group to align it to, and here's an interesting phrase, to the economic and operational impacts of diverse registries. So we ask ourselves a question first. Why is it that when as we understand it, a rather rare occurrence happens that you might have to have a vote based on the sort of the matrix how that happens, that essentially is linked to the number of registrations. And we're saying, well, why was that the case? What is that trying to capture? And the phrase that we came up with as a group was that that was really a measure or sort of a proxy for the economic and operational impact of policy change that might happen, and therefore that was the way that it was done. So we thought, well, if that's the case, and you're now having different types of registries that may join for whom second-level registrations may be very small, but they might have impact, high impacts in other ways, or in the case of the lot that I represent, the dot brands, second-level registrations are an irrelevance, then the measure of the concept of economic and operational impact as a way of measuring vote seemed to be a good way forward, but we didn't know further work on exactly what that would mean. So I hope that's clear in terms of what we're trying to say by recommendation 8. 9 then is a fairly simple recommendation to say that restructuring needs to be looked at to find the optimal new structure based on, and we came up with 5 options, which I'll take you through in a second on the next chart. We also recognise that some of the group we were doing was duplicating a little bit with discussions elsewhere, mostly informal. We had an interesting meeting yesterday that Paul had helped to coordinate with some of those guys. And so it's just recognising that if there are different groups working on structure, it might help to have separate discussions where they're looking at sort of commonality of interests. But the moment those commonality of interests may reflect a set of needs that would reflect structural change, then it'd be very helpful for them to be integrated into our group so that we don't lose that. And recommendation 11 is what we're doing today, which is taking forward this draft report to you guys to say, here it is, to you as a stakeholder group and to you as a leadership. So perhaps we'll just take the last slide, which linked into recommendation 9 there. And this was our thinking through what really the 5 options were without making any judgment call as to the merit of the options. And option 1 is the status quo, where we are today. One member joining as they choose under existing charter. That clearly has simplicity as a pro, as a con. It doesn't meet the needs of a whole bunch of new guys, and it reflects a certain historic view of the DNS. Option 2 would be a move to the sort of the constituency model, for which we saw there were potentially sort of 2 existing and maybe 3 altogether, just to make life complicated. And so you've got the constituency model as in the commercial stakeholder group, where it's a constituency that is the main driver, if you like, of what happens there. The fees are paid to the constituency. There's a deal then in terms of how the voting is shared amongst constituencies. There's a board approval necessary for both the constituency and the stakeholder group charters, and that option, like in fact any of the other options, would need to sort out exactly how voting would change. A variation of that, and that reflects a little bit of new thinking, and that was sort of came about because we, as the brand registry group, made a choice to form ourselves initially as a trade association. So we exist as a not-for-profit registered in Belgium. We understand other groups are looking at doing similar things. So these groups are registering as trade associations and looking at ways in terms of part of their mission, which would be interaction with everything ICANN. So one model may be a sort of a hybrid version of a pure constituency model where there's some sort of direct involvement of the trade association. And we didn't go into any further detail as to how on earth that might be done, but we recognized it as a possibility. Model 4 is a commercial stakeholder, is a non-commercial stakeholder group model, which we thought it was generally a little bit more complex, where you have a bit of a mix of a stakeholder group and constituencies, which seem to be slightly unsatisfactory in our immediate view, without going into too much detail as to how they feel it works. And model 5 is a sort of completely ripping it up and starting again model, whereby you might have multiple stakeholder groups participating, all as stakeholder groups of great industries, and that would clearly need major GNSO reform to look at how all those overlapping interests are best accommodated. I mean, a very good example being the brand registry group, having a brand registry group, an intellectual property group, and a business constituency all with the same companies may be seen to be an odd stakeholder model. And that's where those structural options are. So I say we came up with those 5 models, thinking there would probably be good templates to think about. But as I said, with no particular favoritism for any of those, merely open for discussion and blue sky thinking. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much, Philip. I think it's very constructive, and it's clear that a lot of thought and energy and work has gone into this. So thank you for that. Any questions, comments, thoughts, next steps? All right. Thanks very much for the presentation. Appreciate it. I look forward to the continued work of the group. Jonathan, go ahead.
Thanks, Keith. I'm just wondering, Philip, if you've documented, as Jonathan speaking, I wonder if you've documented or is it recorded anywhere why option one does not meet BRG and or GO needs? Is that something?
Okay. Yeah. Yes. I mean, there's a need in the full report. There's a needs analysis. It's sort of a chart which put it together, really, and that sort of pulls out those issues, and it reflects certainly discussions that we've had with our members, who you recognise for the most part. I mean, there's a founders group, ICANN Savvy. The other 95% are new to ICANN. And their feeling is, as any organisation would be, in joining a new group or an association, we'd like to join one set of guys who look after our needs. We pay a certain set of fees for them, and they manage it for us. You know, that's what they expect to get from joining a group or an association. And so the duplication of roles was seen as unnecessary use of their scarce resources. And they were looking at us to provide some of the expertise to say we will help being a filter for you in terms of what's necessary. And therefore, group participation was seen as to what they want. And I think it was a similar discussion, I think, is taking place amongst the colleagues in the .geo group, although I think they're not quite ready yet here to make that case explicitly. But that was the main thing, really. It was resources and duplication.
Hey, thanks very much. Any other questions or comments? Okay, thanks. So thank you very much, Philip. Appreciate it. So I think we have less than 10 minutes left on our agenda. I have sent a note to the registrars letting them know that we're running 10 to 15 minutes behind. There are a few things that we need to deal with right now, and probably most pressing, and I want to make sure that we have plenty of time for discussion, is to discuss Jeff's replacement on the council. Sorry, Chuck, go ahead.
There's another one that's pressing, too, and that's the ATRT2 comments. Now, I have a workaround, and Paul's probably way ahead of me on this, on that might give us a way. In fact, they gave us a way out in the session this morning, so maybe we can handle that one in just a few minutes. But go ahead with the issue, the other issue, if you'd like.
Why don't we just knock it out? Knock what out? ATRT? Go ahead.
Okay, they actually suggested today that if someone was to submit some personal comments, recognizing that the registries haven't had time to fully do this, it would really help them if they got those, and then the registries could chime in later in terms of the broader support. So if we're okay with that, I'm one of those that would be willing to submit the comments personally. If there's someone else that has reviewed them and would like to join me and tweak them so that whoever we are, we're at least comfortable with them from personal points of view, not representing our companies or the registries, I would be happy for us to do that. So I guess my question is, has anybody else reviewed them at least personally and willing to join me in doing that if the group is okay with that? They're about 9 pages long, I think, right now. The biggest reason for that is the recommendations are printed there, so it's real, because there's so many, it's real clear then. It's easy to go through. You don't have to flip back and forth with the report unless you want to get more detail on their recommendation, and in most cases, there's not that much more. So that would be my recommendation, and if we want to do that, we obviously have to do that by Friday.
It's Paul. Two things, Chuck. Thank you for the offer. That is absolutely a way forward. I will join you on the comments. I would also note the staff lead who's helping us, Larissa, has just posted out that they are, I think as they said previously, they will accept comments during the reply period. So Friday's date is basically kind of artificial, but I'd rather do it while we're here, and I'll work with you on that. Anybody else, please join us.
Okay. Yes, Sherry, go ahead.
Just so I'm clear, are we going to call for a vote? No?
On the HRTQ stuff, I don't think we need a vote if it's personal comments, right?
We will in the next couple weeks. So by our next meeting, we're going to need it. So let and if somebody else wants to join us, please let us know. Just as a practical way forward, Paul, if you would let me know if you want to edit anything, and then we can decide who, I don't care which one of us submits it this week, but then we should put them into format for the constituency format or stakeholder group, and so that there can be, and we probably ought to maybe distribute them for a few days for any comments and then do that as far as the voting, but within probably a week before our next meeting, we should get them out there for the vote. Does that make sense?
Okay, thanks, Chuck. So, Sherry, to answer your question, we're not going to be calling for a vote this week. Anything submitted this week will be personal comments with input from whomever would like to participate or contribute, and then we would call for a vote before the deadline, the deadline of the reply period. Okay. Any other comments, questions on the ATRT2 comments? Okay, so next item, and probably the last item we'll get to before we have to run down to the registrars, which I think is actually right next door, right? Okay, so it's not too far. we're going to be running anyway. Jeff, as we talked about at the beginning of the session, has because he's taken on a new role at Neustar and has a lot more responsibility right now, simply just doesn't have the bandwidth to be able to continue as a counselor. And I think, as we all know, based on what we've seen from Jeff, it, being a counselor is a lot of work. Jeff, I guess I'm going to hand it over to you in terms of your expectations of timing, how much time you have left on your term, and just a little bit of background that can tee up the conversation for us.
Sure. So tomorrow is a meeting of the council. It's actually two meetings of the council. There's one that's the general session for the annual meeting. The first one is basically, just the business, the motions, everything we talked about. And then there's a shorter session. So that's the last meeting of the current council as it exists. The next meeting, which follows that one, is the meeting of the new council, which are the new members of the council. The old members that are done with their term step off, and the new members come on. And then there's a wrap-up session on Thursday, followed by a workshop on Friday that Jonathan could probably talk a little bit about. So my hope would be to step down tomorrow with the other outgoing counselors, and obviously that's a very short amount of time, and just pick someone as a temporary alternate for the second session. That second session is important because they have to elect the new chair. Jonathan's the only one running. So hopefully the new person would vote for Jonathan, or I guess none of the above. Yeah, I mean, that's really the only main business of the second meeting is to vote for the chair and to say some thank yous to some of the outgoing counselors. So my goal would love for someone to step in as kind of a temporary alternate for the second meeting to help elect the new chair. And then if they had time to go on Thursday to the wrap-up and Friday to the other session, that would be ultimately my goal. So let's see what happens. So let's start discussion. So it's up to you all.
Thanks, Jeff. I saw David and Jonathan and Ken and Reg.
Oh, our charter provides for election of a new counselor in the event of a vacancy, and is your term within 90 days of expiring, Jeff?
No.
Yeah. So then we have to just go ahead and elect a new counselor. The temporary alternate only applies if it's a very short, less than 90 day.
Okay, thanks very much, David. Appreciate you doing that research. So then I think, Jonathan, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, thanks. So a couple of comments, I think. First of all, notwithstanding what the registry stakeholder group charter is, we also have this, the council, what's available at the council level. And should Jeff be not available for whatever reason, the council rules provide for a temporary alternate. So we can, that's an option from the council's perspective.
There is a temporary
alternate option. So having said that, my preference from a stakeholder group point of view would be ideally we didn't go through a two-step process. If it was possible, practically, I'd love to see, for more than one reason that I won't expand on now because of the shortage of time, to go straight to our chosen councillor. Second point, just a couple of remarks over the qualities that are required, which are obviously more than met by Jeff. Time commitment, diligence, ability to really focus on some of the key issues, especially from the stakeholder group perspective, to advocate. I mean, one of the key things that we face with me, one of our stakeholder group councillors as chair, is we don't have, I'm less able to advocate, although technically I can say, well, I'm taking off my chair hat. It's ultimately, the practical reality is it's a compromised position from the point of view of our stakeholder group. So those are some of the qualities. It's not all-encompassing, but we really need someone with strong sort of institutional and structural knowledge of some of the history of the issues as well as where we're headed. So that's my two cents worth.
I'm going to ask a couple questions and then make some statements and see if I'm correct. First of all, at this point in time, as far as geographical diversity, we have representatives from Europe, North America, and Asia. Okay. And we would be replacing the North American candidate. Secondly, the term that would be taken by the new council elect, I am assuming, would be a regular term. No, so it is only the balance of your term. Would that person be subject to the term limitations, or would he be entitled, or she be entitled? Let Jeff finish.
Yeah, so this is actually what happened with Jonathan as well, because Jonathan replaced, I think, Caroline. So the 1 year that you would be finishing out my term, whoever it is, and that wouldn't count towards your term limit. So you would be able to serve two additional two-year terms, if you wanted.
And that's a ICANN bylaws issue there, not our charter.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so I think that sets the stage. Ching, go ahead. Thank you.
I'm going to quickly offer, maybe it's not a good idea to jump into a suggestion, but then the suggestion may sound a little bit weird, but also just to show actually if Jeff can stay maybe 1 hour longer or 30 minutes longer on the council, you can actually be a temporary candidate for yourself, actually, and then just for the election purposes, that because you know the procedures, you've been, you know, with us for so, quick suggestion popping out of my mind is that if you can still stay, or for just that 30 minutes to help Jonathan to at least to finish the election part, I think that would be actually helpful. But I understand that the word is out, but...
I would prefer another, just to make kind of a clean break, if possible.
Okay, thanks. So I've got Chuck and then Ken. And then I think what we need to start talking about... Reg, I'm sorry. So Reg, then Chuck, then Ken. Reg?
I was just wondering if we could hear from Jeff an estimate of what his time commitment was on a weekly basis.
So I think what do they say about on a normal week that's not an ICANN week? They say it's about 5 to 10 hours a week just to keep up with everything. And then on the week before ICANN, there's just a lot of things that come in. And obviously the week of ICANN, there are a lot of meetings. There's, the full weekend session. There's usually a Monday meeting with the CCNSO. There's a Tuesday is obviously this day, so you have to be at the entire registry session so you can understand the registry view on everything. Wednesday is the council meeting, which can range anywhere from 2 to 4 hours. Thursday is a wrap-up session, which is about 2 hours. So I think the hardest, the most time commitment is just keeping on top of everything and reading everything that comes out. So it can get pretty long, but for the most part, every week, it's not that huge, I think.
Chuck again, and I was just going to say, if Jeff was willing to do the meeting, the second meeting tomorrow, we don't necessarily need a temporary alternate, because I think your resignation was effective when we have a replacement, right? And we could start an initiation process. Now, if you'd rather have an alternate, we can do that's the easy thing to do. So I think we defer to Jeff's wishes there, but we don't we probably should initiate an election process right away to honor his wishes.
Yeah, I'm not trying to rush this thing, but from a practical standpoint, I don't think you get much more quorate than you do at an ICANN meeting. Is this something that we want to stretch out over an extended period of time? Is there a desire for that, or is it possible for us to arrive at some sort of a consensus while everyone is here, or do we need a deliberative process?
Yeah, so my views on that as chair is that I am a little bit concerned about trying to rush a decision like this. It's an important decision. We need to make sure that we have somebody who is, as described, available to commit the time and energy and focus and, somebody. And, also there's a lot of people who aren't here who may not be participating in the conversation today. So, respecting Jeff's wish to, sort of move this forward quickly, but also taking the time to deliberate and make sure that we arrive at, a decision or conduct an election process that may have more than one nominee, right? I mean, we have a lot of new participants in the stakeholder group now, voting members. So that's just my sense, but I want to hear what others have to think.
That's fine, Keith. That makes sense. I understand what your point. I mean, so the question is, what do we do in the short term? And my suggestion is maybe that we think about the two of you as the sort of leadership of the stakeholder group potentially stepping in to the breach in the short term as temporary alternates. Yeah.
So is that? Let me ask a question though. Is that possible? Because I didn't think that chair or alternate chair could be counselors. Sorry? Yeah, so sorry, David, go ahead.
You can't be an officer and a council rep at the same time under the charter. The charter provides that you cannot serve both as an officer and counselor at the same time.
Okay. Thanks, David. That was my recollection, and I assume acting as an alternate on the council would, you know, be considered being a counselor for the purposes of our charter. Yeah. So, look, we need to get down to our meeting with the registrars. Sorry, Chuck, did you have something else?
Yeah. Could we? Is there any reason why we obviously need to answer that question, but is there any reason why we can't start the nomination process today? It doesn't have to be right now. We don't have time right now. But initiate it today and allow a week. Does anybody think that's too short? Because, again, I think the point's right. We shouldn't rush it. But is that rushing it too much is my question. So I would suggest that. And then we need to make the decision. Okay.
No, I think that makes sense, Chuck. And I think the other thing is we need to identify a temporary alternate for Jeff to honor his wishes. So I guess maybe I'll just ask for a volunteer of somebody who would be willing to step in for Jeff so he can have the clean break that he's looking for.
I guess I'm having a hard time understanding. Maybe you said it before and I missed it, but is there a reason why you just can't do it for the rest of this meeting? I mean, we found out this morning that you're leaving, so you know, obviously we're going to rush and get it done, and we did give you a standing ovation this morning, so...
Yeah, Jeff, you don't want us to take that away, right?
The one issue from me, from a council point of view, is I suspect this might be at least partly on Jeff's mind as well, we've set up Friday as an induction for new councillors and a kind of getting together and bonding session and development session. Now, actually, as it turns out, doesn't sound like we're going to have a registry stakeholder group councillor for that anyway, which is kind of disappointing from a council point of view because the whole point is to try and, you know, set things up, tee things up for the year ahead while we're all together. But that would be a main driver from my point of view.
Okay, thanks. So I'm asking again for a volunteer for an alternate.
I'll do it. I mean, I'm welcome for somebody else to do it. But. And I think I've been off for 2 years, which is another requirement.
All right, very good. So thanks to that. And then, Sherry, we will need to begin the process for nominations.
Call for nominations.
Yeah, let's do that today or tomorrow at the latest. Okay, so let's break and move next door to our meeting with the registrars. Thanks, everybody, for your time and attention today. Thought it was a good session. Let's go ahead and move on down the road.